This week on football, Fatuhu loses his balance. Everton have deducted points again.
Like the news about the first points deduction, there's not a lot we can do about it, but we can only just put performances on the pitch.
Mbappe asked for Pedri's shirt. Dan makes a good point.
I've always said stats are like bikinis. What they show you is interesting, but what they don't show you is equally as interesting.
That's very that profound.
Roy Keane kicks off at Jill Scott.
Jesus, be professional. He trains 9 times a day. It's got to be a lot.
And Michael Chopper joins Goalpost TV. Who's he?
Welcome to this week's episode of Goalpost for Jumpers. It is me, your host, Alex. I am joined by my co-host, Gareth.
What's happening, guys?
And this week we are joined by the legend, the man himself, the man who did this. It's Michael Chopra.
Thank you.
Welcome, mate.
It's great to have you on. Yeah, really cheers. Great to have you.
You've just told us you travelled 4 or 5 hours down to come down. It wasn't especially
not
for us.
For this podcast, obviously. Yeah.
Nah, I left my house at Newcastle probably about 2:30 in the morning.
You're mental.
I had a meeting in Cardiff, so I just thought I'd tie them both up. And obviously, look, we've been speaking for a long time about coming on the podcast. So here I am today.
Mm, yeah, honestly, as I said, I'm a huge Cardiff fan. Dream come true. Dad, look, Chopper's with me.
Hi.
But mate, yeah, it's really good to have you on. Obviously, everyone watching knows who Michael Chopper is. Former Newcastle, Sunderland, Cardiff, Ipswich, Blackpool striker. You've played with some unbelievable players in your time. You're talking Alan Shearer's, Michael Owens, Gary Speed's, Shea Givens, Craig Bellamy's.
Patrick Cliver.
John Parkin.
John Parkin.
Unbelievable. Hey, Ballon d'Or winner.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask you.
Eating pies or playing football?
Both.
I like that it started with a bit of needle. I like that.
Yeah, but out of all those players, obviously not John Parkin, who inspired you the most?
I think probably Alan Shearer.
Being
a Geordie, growing up in Newcastle, he was probably my idol. Obviously, when he came to the club, it was a dream, do you know what I mean? For me being a striker. Obviously I just won the Premier League at Blackburn, coming to Newcastle for a record fee as well, 15 million. I was there when he came on the stage outside St. James's Park in front of like 15, 20,000 people. I think I was probably...
Were you in the academy at that time? Or
I would have been in the centre of excellence, yeah. So I was coming through as a kid. And then obviously as I got older, and we'll speak about it, I become really, really close with him.
So... would you say he's the player that's most inspired you? Is he also the best player you've played with?
I think so, yeah. Obviously, before Alan came to the club, I was watching Newcastle when Andy Cole was there and Peter Beardsley. So I was watching how they would play and that sort of thing. But when Alan came, I was just fascinated by him.
Can I ask you, do you think Andy Cole is underrated?
I knew you were going
to... I'm a Man United fan, but like obviously Andy Cole, for what he's done in the Premier League...
3 million he signed as well for Man United.
Like, 7 million it was from Newcastle, but they got Keith Gillespie as well in Port Exchange. I think he's underrated. No one talks about him.
No
one talks about the partnership he had with Dwight York. It was
the best partnership I've ever seen in my life.
Well, that's probably why they won the treble that year, you know what I mean? Mm. Because of Coley and Yorkie. But look, the amount of goals he scored in that season for Newcastle before he's moved to United, and then obviously what he done at United was phenomenal, do you know what I mean? Mm. And to continue it, it probably doesn't get the recognition, but that's probably because he didn't have as many caps to play while playing for England.
It's probably the England thing as well, isn't it?
But it's hard when you've got, I think Teddy Sheringham was in front of him, and obviously Alan was playing as well at the same time. So
and then Owen came through later as well.
Trying to get them out of the team is difficult.
Yeah.
And obviously you mentioned the sensible excellence. You obviously play for Newcastle. I really wanted to ask, because I see you on Twitter, you're still going to games.
Yeah.
What did Newcastle mean to you as a club?
Well, look, I'm a Geordie, do you know what I mean? I bleed black and white. They're my hometown club. It was a dream come true to play for them, because it was always my ambition since I was a young kid. I put all my heart and soul and effort into becoming a professional footballer, and then to actually make my debut and wear the black and white shirt at St James's Park, it was a dream come true. It was a special moment.
What did that feel like? You know, walking out that tunnel. Do you know what I mean? You're wearing as you say that black and white. You're actually wearing the kit with the Premier League badges on your arms. You know,
it's funny you say that, because I was one of the happiest kids alive. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Going onto the pitch. And then the end of the game, I was probably the unhappiest. We played Everton in the Worthington Cup back then, what it was called.
Oh, yeah, I know the story.
Yeah. And I think we drew 3-3, and it's gone to penalties. Me being a Geordie, I'm saying to Bobby Robson, I want to take a pen.
I love that. How old are you when you're
18 at the time?
That's insane. 18, that takes some bottle out.
I would do it now at 31. And,
so yeah, obviously leading up to the game and all that, you're practicing penalties and everything in training, but taking penalties in training is totally different to take them in a big arena, big stadium. So yeah, Bobby's put my name down and I've gone up to take a pen, and for some reason, I don't know why, whenever I've taken a pen in the youth team reserves in training, I've always hit them hard and low, but for some reason I've tried to stanch it. I don't know why. And it's gone over the board, you know what I mean? And I was absolutely devastated. I got in the change room. We lost the game. I got in the change room and I was just standing in the showers and tears coming down my eyes and stuff that.
Yeah.
And then Alan's walked in and he could see I was upset. Yeah, yeah. Obviously Alan didn't play. He wasn't playing in the game. But he come in to see me, to see how I was, because he knew I was upset. And then he was like, don't worry about missing against Everton. Try fucking missing against Sunderland. It's in front of the Gallagher.
Yeah.
I think a couple of seasons before that, or a season before that, he missed in front of the Gallagher. Sorensen saved it, I think it was. And he was like, fucking, that's when you worry. Do you know
That'd
what I mean?
That would be a horrific
thing. It was brilliant, though, because you had someone like as high profile as him. He didn't have to come in. And he was like, at least you had the fucking balls to take it. You've got players out there who we signed for 5-10 million, didn't have the balls to go and step up.
Do you think that earned you a bit of respect in the squad at that point then, like at a crucial time at 18 years old?
Look, I was always in and around the squads. I was always part of that group. Gary Speed, Alan Shearer, Shea Given, Titus Bramble, Dyer, Bowyer, Solano. I was always around them, do you know what I mean? So it was good that you had senior players coming up to one of the kids and putting the arm around. He didn't have to do that.
No.
But it was good that he recognised that I was upset and that sort of thing.
What was that dressing room like at Newcastle in that period of time?
It was pretty crazy, to be fair. We had signed a lot of young players, but they were good young players. So obviously, Kieran came, Titus, Kieran, JJ. You had Bowyer. These were young up-and-coming stars, do you know what I mean? Darren Ambrose was there with me. Going out in Newcastle was brilliant, do you know what I mean?
It's a great night out, isn't it?
You hear things
back then. It was unbelievable because the team was doing so well. We won the Champions League.
Yeah.
And then you're going out in town and you're a superstar, do you know what I mean? And for a local lad and being 17, 18, being around that was, wow.
I can imagine. Before we go on with the other questions, I want to introduce you to a feature we do on this podcast. It's called Two Lies and a Truth, and it's Michael Chopra themed. So two of these stories are lies and one is true, and you need to try and convince Alex, which basically you need to read them out, and he needs to try and guess which one is the lie.
Right, okay.
So here are the stories. Could you read these stories out? So basically, one is true, Two is a lie. And Michael Chopra themed.
Yes.
See if you can do balance.
We normally do it the other way around, by the way. Yeah, okay. But because he's such a Michael Chopra fan, well, he said, I'm going to know the answer anyway.
Every story you say.
Right, okay.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, the first one.
Yeah.
Whilst coming through the ranks at Newcastle, Chopra once accidentally took Shearer's boots on by accident. He was fined because he didn't turn up for training for 2 days out of fear before he realised that they were actually Shea Givens.
2 days. Okay.
Okay. After signing for Sunderland, an angry Newcastle fan threw a shoe at Chopra's head while he was clothes shopping in a busy Newcastle shopping centre.
100%. That's the one. It's got to be.
What, a lie or true?
That's got to be true.
Okay, that's you the think? Next one.
Go on.
Yeah. Chopra once said that his Call of Duty team deathmatch was vital for Cardiff's team bonding. Jay Boothroyd, Danny Drinkwater, Peter Whittenham, and half the starting lineup were addicted to the shooting game.
I've changed my mind. I think it's that one.
So just to recap, the first story is Chopra thought he stole Shearer's boots, but they were actually Shea Givens, and he didn't turn up to train out of fear, and he got fined for not turning up to training. Story number two is a Newcastle fan lobbed a shoe at his head in a Newcastle shopping centre.
Yeah.
And the last story is that the Cardiff City team was addicted to team deathmatch and Call of Duty, and it was vital to their team bonding.
I think it's got to be that one. That's my feeling.
Do you reckon?
Because I've heard you talk about that you did game a little bit whilst you were...
Don't answer him.
You don't have to answer me. When are we going to find out?
At the end of the episode.
At the end of the episode. Okay.
So obviously we touched on something there, which is, I know you must have been asked a plethora of times, boyhood Newcastle fan, just as I'm a boyhood Cardiff fan. I don't think I could ever play for Swansea. Why did you sign for Sunderland?
Do you know what? People have always asked me this. Yeah. When I got the phone call from Roy Keane, it was in the summer, we were in Portugal on pre-season, and it was a withheld number, and I didn't believe it was Roy. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking...
Till he started swearing at you.
He rang me up and he was like, hi, Michael, it's Roy. And I literally put the phone down like that, and I just I was with the lads. And I was like, fucking someone's winding me up here, saying the Roy Keane.
What did he say on the phone? He was just like highest Roy?
Highest, is it Michael Chopra? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, it's Roy Keane.
You're never going to believe that.
I was like, and then obviously we as we got chatting, I sort of understood the Irish accent and that sort of thing. And then he was just having a chat with me saying, look, I would love to sign you. Obviously, we've just been promoted. You're a great goal scorer. You've played against us during the season. I love the way you play. But, and this is what he said, but you're a big Newcastle fan, so you're going to have to think long and hard about it. And I appreciated him because he knew that I was a Geordie. Do you know what I mean? He knew that it would be a massive thing. He told me to go and speak to my family. In the end of the day, you've got to do a football decision. Do you know what I mean? I spoke to my mum and dad, and I spoke to Dave Jones. And Dave was like, yeah, we know someone will put a bid in for you. He was like, well, you're not training. I was like, what do you mean I'm not training? He says, because we need the money. I was like, what do you mean?
They wrapped you in bubble wrap, basically, didn't
they? Yeah. The lads were training. They were playing a game. And he just said, listen, you're not training just in case you get injured. And I was like, well, I'm in Portugal. I said, Gaffer, can you just delay it a little bit longer so I can have a bit of a jolly up with the lads. So obviously I knew straight away that they had to sell me the club. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Cardiff were facing
there was financial.
Yeah,
I remember during the season before I left, we didn't get paid on time. The training ground was at Treforest.
Yeah,
the lads were doing weights in the car park. And it was freezing, do you know what I mean?
When you were eating food in shipping containers.
Porter cabins. It was ridiculous. Cold food and everything. It was crazy. And the gaffer said to me, look, we need you to go. We need the money. We paid 300 grand for you. We're going to get 5 million. That can go towards a new training ground and whatever else. I can bring some new players in. So I was like, okay. And then I spoke to my agent and he said, look, there's some other clubs interested in you. I think Villa might have been interested at Everton.
Well, bear in mind, just a context here, people watching, maybe Alex, you scored 22 goals that season for Cardiff.
Yeah, I just signed a new deal in February as well.
But how old were you at that time?
2006, I would have been 23, I think.
You know, 22, 23 years old, scoring 22 goals in a championship. Yeah. You must
that,
have had
that
a
was
lot
my first
of
season. Do you know what I mean? It was
it's your first goal scoring season.
Yeah, I had to drop out the Premier League just to prove myself. To them, they take one step back, two forwards. And then I was thinking, spoke to my mum and dad, and spoke to my agent, and for a football decision, being back home in Newcastle, living in Newcastle as well. But one of the most important things was to actually work under Roy. Obviously, he's been the Man United captain for a long time. His standards were so high. I wanted to understand why people respected him so much. So I spoke to him a few days later, and I made my decision that I was going to go. And look, if Cardiff weren't in the situation the way, and I probably would have stayed.
Because it almost stops your momentum. You're on that role, and you probably knew the next season that you were going to hit the ground running again. And who knows who could have come in for you at that point.
Yeah, that's right. And obviously, I'm pretty sure it was that year when... Yeah, it was that year. I just bought a new house as well. It was in the middle of getting built. Me and Steve McPhail, we bought one next door to each other in Corntown, just outside of Cowbridge. So I was getting a house built and everything. Yeah. And then to leave it and go move back up. I just moved all my stuff back down to then take it all back up to the northeast. You know what I mean? After like 8 months, but
it's crazy though. Football like that as an industry, like if you want a family and kids in football, we've spoken to other footballers. Yeah. You and your family need to prepare that you're going up and down constantly. Yeah. As you said, you're driving from Newcastle to Cardiff all these times. You said there though, obviously you would have stayed. You know, if Cardiff weren't in a predicament like that, you know, how did it feel? Because I remember you. You grew so close to the fans at that point. You were a cult hero. You had your own chance and everything. Although the Premier League's knocking, how, you know, when a player is in a transfer process like that, how hard is it to leave a club?
No, look, it was difficult. Do you know what I mean? I didn't want to leave. I was playing unbelievable football.
Yeah.
I scored 20 goals by February. Do you know what I mean? And obviously, that's when I got my new deal. There was a clause in my contract.
Nice bonus on that, wasn't there?
When I signed in the summer, there was a clause to say if I hit 20 goals, I get a new deal. And by February, I think it was, I signed a new deal. And so I was happy, do you know what I mean? Things were going so well for me and everything. And then obviously, look, it's football, do you know what I mean? Things happen in football, and it was time to go back home.
You had a good relationship with McPhail then, on off the pitch, obviously.
Yeah,
alleged.
I had a great relationship with Macca.
You love playing with him, right?
Obviously, a couple of years before that, when I was on loan at Barnsley for the season,
Macca was
at Barnsley as well, and also Peter Ridsdale was the chairman at Barnsley as well, and obviously he was the chairman of Cardiff. So, in a way, when I first came to Cardiff, I think it was down to Peter why I came to them. Do you know what I mean? I was going to go to other clubs. I was telling my agent that surely there's some other clubs interested in me. Do you know what I mean? Because I didn't, no disrespect to Cardiff at that time, I didn't, their stadium, Ninian Park, I didn't know what it was like until you actually played there. Do you know what I mean?
I was going to say, with Ninian Park, Rio Ferdinand once said, it's the most intimidating stadium he's ever played at. What was it like as a player playing for the home team at Ninian Park? Because it was mental.
Though. Yeah, it was. I remember, I think it was Wolves we were playing at home. Think it might have been 2-2. I can't remember what the score was, but I remember behind the goal when you come out on the right hand side. Obviously, you had the away fans half
right
and half
next to the home fans,
and literally halfway through the game, I just seen like loads of Wolves fans jumping over the boards in the corner, and the game's going on. Obviously, look, I'm just new to it. Do you know what I mean? I'm turning around, thinking, what the fuck's going on? Yeah, and then I'm seeing loads of chairs getting lobbed into the Wolves end from the Cardiff fans. Like, it was kicking off. I didn't realise how bad it was between Wolves and Cardiff at the time. Then it just like the atmosphere and everything. It was and you got to remember we had that season. We had a great start of the season as well. Yeah. I think we beat Birmingham at home as well. West Brom might have been.
Well, we were top.
We were flying, but the squad was so fucking short. Do you know what I mean? That's probably why we couldn't maintain it. When we were beating teams, it was unbelievable. I remember when we beat Leeds at home when I scored the free kick and I got sent off. It was rocking. Do you know?
It was
obviously
a hell of a
Leeds.
Free kick.
And,
we watched that earlier.
Yeah, Leeds and Cardiff rival was massive, and then obviously people say that I scored the best ever hat-trick at Ninian when I scored the hat-trick against Leicester.
But all passes were from... Oh, was that Leicester?
Leicester at home, we won 3-2. We were 3-0 up.
But then you scored like a perfect hat-trick against Derby, didn't you? When Peter Winham set up like every single goal.
That was...
No, you scored four.
I scored four at
Cardiff
City Stadium. Yeah, but...
he was a joke.
which one was the one where you had a pint of Coke at half-time and it kind of spurred you on to score a hat-trick? Which one was that? If that's another one, then you scored too many goals.
I think that must have been the...
could it have been the Bristol game?
Nah, I didn't score a hat-trick against Bristol. I think it was Leicester when we... It might have been Leicester at Ninian. It must have been Leicester at Ninian because I've got the match ball in the house from the Derby game and I don't think it says you can have a pint of Coke any time on there. But yeah.
Someone wrote you... Was it the fitness coach or something?
I think it was the fitness coach, yeah.
Wrote that.
I used to... just need like a sugar boost, do you know what I mean? And people have a Red Bull and stuff like that.
But I wasn't
into all that. I'd just like give me. Sometimes I'd have a shot of coffee, do you know what I mean, with loads of sugar in it. But I just remember going in at half time and I didn't feel that great, do you know what I mean? And obviously, when you have a sugar boost, a boost gives you a little bit of energy, sort of thing. So yeah, I remember asking the fitness coach for, can you give me a pint of Coke? And he was like, what the fuck? Must have been thinking, what's going
on?
Cardiff?
Sean Connolly? Was it Sean?
No, Sean was a physio, but it was Alex Armstrong.
Just asking someone to have a pint of Coke.
He's like,
he had to go out to the bar.
He sent someone to the players' lounge up in there, whichever ground it was, and he was like, oh, give me a pint. I just like downed it at the half time, do you know what I mean?
I want to talk about it.
Scored a hat-trick straight after.
Yeah. I need to talk because I've heard you speak about it in some places. I really want to get into your diet at Cardiff because I've heard from other players like it was horrific.
Yeah. Rustler's Burgers?
Yeah, I remember we went to, I think it was Watford away when we won 4-1. When Adam Matthews scored that goal from the halfway line.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Over the keeper, yeah. I think it was then I was... look, I chuck a burger in the microwave, do you know what I mean?
I feel like I was at this
if
game.
If I was hungry, do you know what I mean? But look, I don't believe
it.
Would you have had the same confidence if you knew
it's the thing, like, you know, obviously I was 15, 16, after you idolised Chopper and Bothra at this age, and I love the fact that I didn't know
that
he was eating a Russell's burger at half time.
I just had that belief in my ability.
Yeah.
Sports scientist and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
If you were a good player, you were a good player.
You wouldn't get away with it now, though, would you? They wouldn't let you.
They wouldn't let you, of course. Yeah. I mean, obviously, the game's changed, but back then, it's... Do you know what I mean? Obviously, if it was a different physio and that, they would have probably said no to me. I just believed in my ability. If I score goals, why change things? Do you know what I mean?
And I doubt anyone at the club is...
Exactly. What makes you happy... Keep it that way. I remember when I drove down from Newcastle to Cardiff one time, and obviously it was one of them long drives. I think I left at about 2:30 and I got to train at like 8:30, 9 o'clock. I'd stopped off at one of the services and I got like 12 Krispy Kremes for the lads.
Were they for the lads?
it was at the Vale, and obviously we trained downstairs where the rugby lads train now. And I walked in and some of the lads are doing weights and all that. And I walked in with these Krispy Kremes and Sean Conley's come out the physio room and he's just fucking smashed them on the floor. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Do you know what I mean? I was like,
they're expensive. They're not cheap.
$12.50 or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, fucking for the lads and all that. He was like, I don't give a fucking all that and stuff like that. And I had a little argument with him. But that's just, do you know what I mean? It's just one of those things.
Talking of strange diets, we spoke about John Parkin before we started recording, and to be fair, I've seen clips of this, and I wanted to give you a platform really to reply to some of the accusations.
What were the accusations? Talk us through what Parkin said.
Under the caution and stuff like that, how me and Jay have been treated by Dave Jones, and obviously he was he's a striker and he wants to play in the team, and if you're not getting selected. And he's doing all he can in training, then he's trying to complain. But at the end of the day, me and Jay were flying, do you know what I mean? We were scoring goals, we were winning games, the partnership we had together was unbelievable, and rightly so. The gaffer would give us time off, and I used to say to the gaffer, if I score and we win, can I have a couple of days off to go back up to Newcastle? And the gaffer was like, yeah, no problem. He would do similar stuff with Jay, but Jay obviously didn't go home. He lived in Cardiff.
Yeah.
It was just little things like that. But
he said something as well about, like, you and Jay were too busy, you know, too indulged in arguing about who had the best Versace bag or Gucci bag.
D&G it was.
What was it?
Dolce & Gabbana.
Oh, it was. So you do remember.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Well, look.
But you're kids at the end of the day.
Exactly,
like, enjoying your career.
Me and Jay liked our fashion back then, do you know what I mean? And stuff like that. So obviously, I would go to, I think it might have been Flannels in Cardiff City Centre, and buy some D&G stuff, come in the next day and that sort of thing. And it was funny, and Jay was like, oh, how much D&G stuff you got on today and stuff like that. It was just banter between us, do you know what I mean?
That's normal
stuff. The end of the day, if people don't like it, they don't like it. But when me and Jay are producing and scoring goals and keeping Parky out the team, which
that's obviously what he's
said. I just never imagine the Parky standing in it is like slouching your t-shirt
with a beanstalk down it.
Like, the thing is, like, he's done really well with Under the Cosh. Yeah. He's been on this brilliant podcast and stuff, and
he was a great guest on the podcast. He was a good laugh.
This is nice the problem with sometimes with these platforms. Like, obviously, you were so great for the club. Parkin came into Cardiff and complained the whole time. You know, he was a good player at a certain level.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily agree about going on other podcasts and calling other players out who were quite clearly doing very well for the club.
Well, you do it on podcasts, don't you, to get viewers
and
stuff like that. What do viewers want? They want to hear shit about other players and that sort of thing. That's basically
You mentioned something about Hudson as well. He was obviously the captain of Cardiff.
Yeah, Hudson mentioned something as well on Under the Cosh about gangsters turning up at training, and I was hiding. Nothing like that happened at Cardiff. Do you know what I mean? Nah. What had happened was in another football club.
Hmm.
And obviously, look.
Well, actual gangsters?
Yeah, well, obviously I've had a big problem with the gambling and stuff like that.
That's fucking scary, mate.
When you've borrowed money off people and the wrong people.
Yeah.
And it's time to get the money back, do you know what I mean? And you don't pay on time, even if you're one day late. People don't like it.
I've got to be honest, like, we didn't really want to speak about the gambling because you get asked all the time.
I guess it's so
it's like we don't want it to define you because, like, you're so much more than that. But I want to more focus on how were you feeling at that time. You must have been shitting yourself.
Not really. I just
was this at Ipswich, did you say?
Yeah, it was Ipswich. I just cracked on.
It didn't faze you
playing football. I just thought what happens, do you know what I mean? It's life. That's the way I was. It's just I take each day as it comes. And then obviously the one to Ipswich, I remember even Jimmy Bullard's mentioned it on something as well. He mentioned the wrong story.
I remember podcast. Yeah.
I remember coming off the training pitch and Jimmy and Crezzy were in front of me. And obviously somebody has been standing there with like an autograph, we just pretending to get autographs. And one of them has asked Crezzy, where's Chopra? And obviously, they've mentioned he's behind. And then Jimmy had said that, I had said to the guy, oh, there he is. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, that asked me where Chopra is, and I pointed at Crezzy. But no, he came up to me and he was like, listen, you need to get in the club now and get that money sorted. But even then, there was a car in the car park when I was at Ipswich, and it was like full of Somalians, I think it was. Ipswich were really good, do you know what I mean?
They
looked after me. They helped me with the gambling addiction. At the time, it was worrying because people are looking for me and after me. I remember I had the same car as Dowell Murphy. After training, we were going to the David Lloyd to do some a cool down in the swim pool. And they must have thought that Murph was me.
Hmm.
And when he drove out after him, because I remember Murph ringing me up saying, listen, these fucking people in this car must think I'm fucking you. But no, Paul Jewell was brilliant at the time. I spoke to Paul about it on the day it happened. And Ipswich were brilliant with me. Do you know what I mean?
Roy Keane was really good with you as well, didn't he?
Yeah, Roy was the first one that got me into rehab.
Mm. How did that conversation come about with Roy?
I think it was pretty much when I first signed at the club, told them I hadn't a gambling debt and it was a little bit of an addiction.
So you had someone at the club to like approach about that? Or was it just, you know, what made
My agent spoke to the club about it. And obviously Roy was brilliant. Obviously Roy's got his own personal problems. And Roy was really good. He was like, listen, you're going straight to rehab to get sorted. It wasn't like continue to play and, or you'll be okay and that sort of thing. He knew all about addictions. And he was like, listen, I'm going to call the guy at Sport and Trans Clinic, Tony Adams's clinic, and I'm going to get you booked in. It was fully booked. So he'd sent me to there was a hospital in London called Capio Nightingale. And I was staying in the Landmark Hotel and I was going to Capio Nightingale for treatment and all that, but it was just fucking bollocks. I didn't want to be there. Do you know what I mean? I didn't want to stop gambling. And if you don't want to stop, you're never going to stop. But Roy was always there for me. Do you know what I mean? After training, how are your chops? Come to my office if you need me. Come and have a cup of tea with me and that sort of thing. Look, he was really, really good. Like other managers were, people at Ipswich were brilliant as well. Do you know what I mean? They really went out the way to look after me. Simon Clegg, Paul Jewell. I remember, obviously, the first year I got fined quite a lot at Ipswich. So, obviously, Paul Jewell's mentioned to the owner, if we get chops right, we've got a good chance of going up.
Yeah.
So Ipswich sent me to a fitness camp, like a retreat in California in the ashram. I went with a fitness coach and everything to get proper, super fit. It was brilliant, you know what I mean? With Ipswich, they brought in a guy called Steve Williams. He was an Olympic rower. He won a gold medal with Redgrave and that.
Yeah.
They brought him to the training ground to just look after me, take me to the David Lloyd, make sure I'm eating healthy and everything. They didn't have to do that, you know what I mean? They were brilliant. And little things like that, you realise how much clubs mean to you, do you know what I mean? And looking after players and stuff like that.
Support network, yeah. Because obviously Roy Keane's got that, you know, that reputation of being a hard man, just really brutal and almost
horrible. Well, Greg Helford didn't have good things to say about
him. Well, it's just the way you get on with him, isn't it?
Yeah.
Obviously, people don't see eye to eye with Roy.
No, but if he's going out of his way to... He doesn't have to ask you to come.
Well, exactly,
for a cup of
tea. Yeah. Exactly.
He doesn't need to.
At the end of the day, he's a manager and I'm just a player.
He's got other shit to worry about, but the fact that he's put his hand out to help you, that speaks volumes.
Of course it doesn't. That's why, if anyone says to me, what's Roy like, I've always got good words for him, because he was always there for me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? A lot like Alan Shearer was there for me at Newcastle when I first had the addiction. I had the same agent as Alan, and he called my agent up and told him, you need to get Michael some help. He's got a problem.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can see which people look out for you and who don't.
How are you doing these days?
Yeah, all good, mate. All good. Yeah. You just take it day by day. But yeah, all good, mate.
It'll always be there.
Yeah, it's always in the back of your mind and stuff like that.
But it's like with anything. It's like with alcohol, cigarettes, drugs. It's an addiction.
Yeah,
and it's a daily fight. But I'm glad you do better.
Yeah.
Have you got any advice like for people who would be in a similar situation, or footballers that are in a similar situation?
If it's not just gambling, it's anything, mental health, anything, you just reach out to people. A lot of people are afraid. I was afraid to speak to people. I thought I could keep it all to myself, and it's the worst thing ever. You've got to go out and seek help. There's loads of people in the same position as me, do you know what I mean? I didn't realize Roy had his own problems and stuff like that, and we're all in the same boat, and it was great to communicate with people and that sort of thing. So if anyone's got any problems, don't be afraid to reach out to people, because everyone wants to try and help.
Yeah. But look at Sandro Tonali now in Newcastle. He's, I mean, potentially a career-ending, it's not even an injury, but it's a mental injury and something that he's really struggling
and
with.
And this is what I don't agree with the FA and that sort of thing, because you take football away, then it's going to affect their mental health.
Yeah.
Whereas if you let them play football and you help them as well on the side, they're still enjoying what they love doing, which is their life. And they can get the help they need to make sure they're better people in the long run.
They're punishing people for illnesses, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I that's a good point, actually, because any other addiction, you'd get the support network, but to ban you for a genuine addiction, like, he obviously can't help it. As you well know, it takes over you.
Yeah, and so I don't understand.
To then take away your job, that is your only distraction.
And then you hear people, well, why is he gambling? He's earned thousands and this sort of thing. People don't understand what an addiction is, do you know what I mean? They just think you can switch a switch. Yeah.
It's like, oh, you've got enough money now. Why would you need
exactly,
more?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's relative to earnings. You might earn, I don't know, a grand a week as a brickie.
Yeah.
And you'll gamble £900 of that way. You could earn 10 grand as a footballer and you'll gamble 9,000. Yeah, exactly. It's the exact same illness for different people.
Yeah.
And people don't take it as serious as they need to. And tonight is a great example of that. But yeah, I wanted to get away from the gambling side because I know you've spoken about it a lot, but you know, really do appreciate
talking.
Wanted to like derby goals. I know you've got a question about the Newcastle one, but obviously one sticks out in my mind. I was there. I actually thought it was Steve McPhail until I got home because after you scored the winner against Swansea, it went into so much pandemonium. I didn't even have time to like take in who scored the goal. So I was like, that was a good goal from Steve McPhail. And my dad, he's like, it was Chopra. I was like, no fucking way. My dad had a seat thrown in his head from the Swansea fans. It was mental.
Yeah.
But like, I wanted to ask you, what does it feel like in that moment to score a last-minute winner against bitter rivals?
Look, you can see it in my face, my celebration. Don't know what to do with myself. Do you know what I mean? I literally, ask me now why I done a roly-poly that. Why did I not just jump in with the fans? Do you know what I mean? I look back now and I just think, should have jumped in with the fans.
Because you were so calm and composed with the Bristol girl that you took your boot off as if it was on fire. But against Swansea, do you know what it was like? It was like you went back to like your child, like inner
just,
child.
I think it's just a relief that you've beat your rivals, do you know what I mean? Leading up to the game, look, I know myself when Newcastle Sunderland, I know how much it means to the fans.
Mm.
So when you're in Asda and them sort of places in Cardiff, and you're getting fans coming up to you saying, come on, we've got to beat the Jacks at the weekend.
How often would that happen?
Pretty much a lot, mate, a lot. Sometimes we couldn't really go out in supermarkets, do you know what I mean? Because you're getting a lot of people coming up to you and fans and stuff like that. And some people can't deal with it.
Yeah.
It gets too much for them.
Yeah, but I don't think
look,
like
at the
it.
End of the day, it's an important game for the fans, do you know what I mean? Most importantly, they get the bragging rights. So obviously, look, playing in derby games, I love playing in derby games. They're the games what you look out for when the fixtures are first and out, the games I look out for. When do we play Swansea?
What does it feel like, though? Because obviously in the stands, I was at the game, I've been at a lot of cars, and it's almost like it's palpable, the tension. You almost feel sick. You were Man United Liverpool the other day, you said you felt sick.
Oh, yeah.
When you're actually a player that cars Swansea, like, is there a difference? Do you feel different when you're on that pitch?
I feel a difference.
Yeah.
Some people say
It's just another game. It's not.
I've heard Dave say in interviews
Dave Jones used to do that fans' head in that.
Yeah. But
just
I think
another game.
Just, yeah. But look, I think, look, growing up, Geordies are the same as Cardiff fans. Mm. They're really passionate about football. I knew how much it meant to the fans. Mm. And I think that's what kind of helped as well. We had a really strong bond of players. We had some Welsh boys in the team as well, and they would drill it into us, do you know what I mean? It means a lot to the fans and the club. And when you're going out there, it's just like brilliant, you know what I mean? The atmosphere and everything. And then when you go 1-0 down, and obviously we're in the playoffs, they're in the playoffs, we're both challenging, do you know what I mean? Whoever wins is probably, well, we won, thankfully, and they couldn't get in the playoffs sort of thing. It kind of derailed them a bit, you know what I mean? You lose that game and your head's down, it's going to be hard to then climb momentum and that sort of thing. But yeah, look, a special moment, you know what I mean? People forget I scored the first one because they only talk about the winner.
It is.
But
it
even the first goal, the first goal was important, you know what I mean? Mm. It was on the stroke of half-time. On the stroke of half-time, if you go in 1-0 down, the dressing room's a totally different environment.
Yeah.
But going in 1-1, it's give all the lads a bit of a boost. And look, and obviously, before I scored, Marshy's made a great save from Chef Capucci's header as well.
Oh my God, I remember.
So it's just fine margins, do you know what I mean? It can go one way or it can go the other. And look,
is that David Marshall?
Yeah.
underrated goalkeeper.
Yeah,
he was I thought he was brilliant.
The season.
Oh, he mate, I thought he was so good, yeah. And that's that, like, obviously not a Cardiff fan, but I remember watching him thinking...
He's unbelievable.
Nobody would talk about him, but yeah, I thought he was brilliant in the Premier League.
Yeah, he was a really good goalie.
Is there a goalkeeper that you played with that, you know, as a striker, particularly in training, that you thought, do you know what, they're a level above?
Well, obviously I played with Shay Given and them type of keepers, do you know what I mean?
I see all you've done there.
he was unbelievable. Obviously, when I was at Sunderland, I played with Craig Gordon. He was obviously the most expensive goalkeeper at the time. Brilliant goalkeeper. I've played with some great goalkeepers.
I wanted to go back as well earlier when we mentioned your four goals against Derby.
Yeah.
Pretty much all of those goals were set up by one person, Peter Whittingham. Obviously, unbelievable footballer. What was it like playing with him?
Whit was unbelievable. Sorry that he's not here anymore as well. It's sad. But even I go back to the season 2006, I think it was, when he came. I think he came halfway through the season. And I remember the goal I scored against Preston. When he done that Cruyff on the touchline.
Yeah.
I've played against Whit loads of times in Aston Villa reserves. I knew all about Whit. And the gaffer, obviously Dave had told me that he was going to try and sign certain players in the January window. And Whit was one of them. And I knew if we could get Whit, then it's going to be take Cardiff to another level. Because obviously, look, I played against a lot of players. And when I was in Newcastle reserves, and Whit was one of them, he was a fantastic player. But I remember that the way he set me up for that goal, it was brilliant. But look, I knew that you get in the right space in the box, Whit will find it. His left foot was unbelievable.
It's honestly insane.
And I think that's why he's gone down in history of being one of the best ever Championship players.
He was named, I think, by EFL as the greatest. And then Tarap was second, but the greatest Championship player. And yeah, as you said, his wand was insane. He was a Premier League player, but he just didn't have the pace. And even he used to say that in interviews, that he doesn't have the pace. And you needed that in the Premier League. He was a lot faster. But, you know, that left wand, you know, deserved to be in the Premier League. I wanted to ask, if you don't mind, like, how did, obviously, his unfortunate death, how did that affect you guys? Because obviously, you must all keep in touch.
Yeah, well, look, I remember I was in Indonesia at the time. And Dave called me and told me what had happened.
Dave Jones?
Yeah, Dave Jones rang me up when I was in Indonesia. It was late at night in Indonesia. And I was devastated. Obviously, Indonesia is about 6-7 hours ahead, so I was in bed. And I just got out of bed and I was just sitting on the sofa and just crying. Because I couldn't, even now, I get upset about it. Because I was really close with Whit when I played at Cardiff. But he was a great kid. It was just a shame what had happened in the wrong place at the wrong time and that sort of thing. But whenever people mention his name and anyone just speaks so highly about him, do you know what I mean? He was an unbelievable player, and I was lucky enough to play with him.
Yeah, and you know, that team, that period, it was a magical team. Yeah. It was probably the last time Cardiff generally had an identity and how they played. And yeah, you know, obviously, rest in peace, Whittingham. He's an absolute legend. You know, wanted to kind of go towards another Derby kind of goal you scored.
Newcastle, Sunderland. How does that compare? The North East Derby compared to Cardiff, Swansea?
Do you know what? It's pretty similar.
Mm.
Obviously, this year is the first time they've played them in a long time. And they had the bubble like what Cardiff had when they travelled to Swansea. The rivalry is unbelievable. It's the same, do you know what I mean? And I remember we were getting beat 1-0. So I think Sunderland had already been relegated as well, and we were getting beat 1-0. And Glenn Roeder, sadly, he's not here as well. I remember Glenn speaking to me at half-time, and he was like, listen, we're getting beat 1-0. Just make sure you're ready. He was like, are you ready? I was like, yeah, I'm a Geordie, of course I'm ready. We're playing Sunderland.
Be ready to do a kid.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And obviously Lee Clark's come off being a Geordie, used to play for Sunderland. He obviously didn't like it. And as I've gone on, and as I've running on, I've just kind of ran straight into the box, and Titus has played a free kick in the box. The ground's been like literally bone dry, and the ball's bounced. But normally it skids through, but it's kind of skipped back. And I think the keeper was Calvin David. He's come to try and get it. As he's come to get it, I've just smashed him. Do you know what I mean? You're in a derby, just go through him. Do you know what I mean? And thankfully for me, it's fell like literally on the goal line. I've just tapped it in and started going mad celebrating with the Geordies. Do you know what I mean? I've scored a goal, my first Premier League goal against Sunderland.
That's insane.
Made it 1-1, and then we go on and win the game 4-1, and we batter them.
You turned the trajectory of the game.
Pretty much, yeah.
As a kid, yeah. Coming on.
Yeah. That's got to be up there, best yeah. moment. Right?
I would still be going to bed every night. Thinking of that.
The goal against Sunderland and obviously the goal against Swansea are up there. Look, they might not be great goals, but most goals, important goals, do you know what I mean? They're special goals. To score in any derby is special.
You say they're not great goals, though. Like
any goal's a great goal.
But your movement for the Swansea goal, you know, when Wildig heads it over, to stay on side in that moment.
People have always asked me, why even standing on the edge of the box when there's a throw-in?
Yeah,
92 minutes. Yeah. Why are you not in the box getting a flick on?
Yeah,
but it's just instinct. Do you know what I mean?
It's not your game.
It's just one of them things where I don't know why I was standing there.
Yeah,
why I wasn't in the box at the back post waiting, or if the ball goes short, comes back out and then gets whipped in, sort of thing. And look, I was just there. Do you know what I mean? I was perfect timing and everything. It was just, like I said, all my goals are just instinct. Mm. That's what a striker is. It automatically happens. You're not coached it. You're not taught it.
It just comes natural. It's just there. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you look at some of the stuff Wayne Rooney done over the course of his career. You can't teach that.
Yeah.
You can't. Same as Michael Owen, I suppose, when you play with Michael Owen. You
can't teach some of this stuff. You're born with it.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to kind of finish up the episode with, obviously, the two lies and a truth, Michael Chopper edition. So obviously, just to recap, guys, the first story was when Chopper was coming through the ranks, he thought he stole Alan Shearer's boots, but in fact, they were actually Shay Given's, and he got fined for not turning up to training because he was scared. The other story is an angry Newcastle fan threw a shoe at Chopper's head in a Newcastle shopping centre. And the final story is Chopper once said that Call of Duty's team deathmatch mode was the main reason for Cardiff City's great integral bond in that period. So
I think it's that one. I think it's the Call of Duty one.
Why?
That's what I'm going with.
You're so
because
adamant.
At the time, Call of Duty, that was COD 4, wasn't it?
Well, 2000 and...
Is that COD 4?
Yeah, it's called Modern Warfare.
2008, 2009.
See, he knows it. He knows it already. See, he know.
You cheat. Nah, fair. Well, you might have just played.
Yeah. COD 4 at the time, I think that's probably what gave it away. And I did hear you in an interview talk about how you liked
it. Oh, right, okay. Yeah, there we go.
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that bit, but I knew you liked
the
game.
I want to talk about that. So you, Danny Drinkwater, Bothroyd,
listen, there was
actually were playing.
There was. I'm talking there must have been about eight lads, not just
what, like
two
private
or three.
Lobbies or?
So sometimes we would, after training, obviously, Wits didn't have any kids. I didn't have any kids. Drinky was on loan, so he would come down sometimes. I'd just take my TV and go around Witter's.
Really?
We'd go around Witter's house and just put the TVs next to each other and like four or five PlayStations in the room and just playing COD.
And what a dream.
I can't believe that.
Not just that though, but even like if we didn't go to Witter's, then we'd be in our own homes. Yeah. And the lads used to say, right, okay, some of the lads had kids, Gavin Ray and stuff like Kev McNaughton. So they would put their kids to bed and send a message in the group saying, please jump on COD. And we'd go on at like 8, 9 o'clock and playing COD till like 1 in the morning.
It is a team, but it is a bonding experience,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so I think it was like, you can play with 6 in a party, I think it was.
Mm.
And we used to go on there and just absolutely just smash people. Do you know
really?
What I mean? Kev McNaughton was unbelievable at COD.
Was he? I was going to say,
yeah,
was he
Kev
the best?
Was brilliant, really good. Yeah.
What
really
were you
good.
Like?
I was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was all right. Yeah.
You ever get the band back together?
Look, I'd love to, but some of them probably don't play it. Do you know what I mean? I still play the PlayStation.
What do you play?
What COVID? I would have thought that would have.
Yeah, that would have been.
COVID would have been brilliant. But
yeah.
I don't know. Look, that's probably why we were so close and done so well as a team, because the bonding we had. If we would go to a restaurant, we'd go as a 9 or 10 lads would go to the restaurant, and we'd go Nando's down the bay, there'd be 10 of you there.
Yeah.
Whereas now you'd probably see 2 or 3 lads going from the first team together.
Yeah, you do. We had a really,
really good connection. It was unbelievable.
Thank you, Activision.
Yeah, we obviously joke about it, but it did make a big difference.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think it happens with loads of football clubs. Mm. Loads of them play Call of Duty. Mm. I was watching a thing on YouTube not that long ago where I think one of the YouTubers might have been Speed or someone. I don't know if it was Speed.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
They were playing Fortnite.
Yeah.
And Harvey Barnes and a couple of the Newcastle boys absolutely destroyed them. Mm. And he was going, who the fuck's Harvey Barnes? Fuck. Do you know what I mean? And he's a YouTuber and stuff like that. But it's just, look.
I've watched it. They're on clubs at the moment, pro clubs on FIFA.
Yeah, people play pro clubs. Yeah,
but there was I think Sammy Schmodix was up front.
What? Actual Sammy Schmodix?
Yeah, it was mad because the team, you went through it. It was Sammy Schmodix. Who else? There was a couple of Prem players as well.
So we would try and get out, like, obviously, if you knew players from a different club as well.
Yeah.
We'd try and get like 4 or 5 of our lads to play their lads as well in a private lobby.
Wow.
Alan Tate. And then, I just love a Cardiff versus Swansea.
And then when I went to Ipswich, we all the lads were hooked on Clash of Clans.
Oh, no way. Yeah, that was a pretty addictive game.
So after a game, if we won, all the lads would sit at the back of the bus. You spend fucking £75 on all these gems and stuff like that.
Oh, look at my ogre.
That's what we used to do.
You'd look forward to that part of it. That was like one of the big things.
It's just one of the things we used to do. If we win a game, we'd buy the maximum amount of gems and boost your...
You forget football as a kid, though.
You boost your thing up, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Everyone's the same. Like, everyone's people.
You know, we're 31. I still feel like a kid, but like... You know, when you were playing for Cardiff, you were in your mid-20s.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So you were actually a kid.
Yeah.
Mad.
Well, it's all great memories, do you know what I mean? Yeah. You never lose them. I was speaking to somebody at the club today, and they were asking me questions about a game we used to play with the 50 pence on the pitch. Percy introduced it.
Darren Pearce.
Yeah, he'd start the game with a hole in the 50 pence, and then you'd have to pass it round while you're playing on the pitch.
That's genius.
During a football game?
During a football game.
No.
Yeah.
That's
mad.
So we're half-time. Whoever's got
You telling me right now that you used to play a game in championship football standard and you're all passing a 50 pence as a game?
Yeah. We need to pull up some old clips, don't we?
If you ever speak to Percy, ask him about the 50 pence game. Somebody was talking to me about it today.
I can't believe that.
So whoever's stuck with it at half-time has to buy like a round of pints and stuff like that for all the lads. And whoever's left with it at the end... has to buy like the meal for the lads, but you couldn't say no to the 50 pence, so you don't know who's got it.
How would you pass it to someone?
On a corner, you're like,
that's class. That's class.
I mean? It's just little things like that. Next time, if you ever bump into Percy, just say, "Oh, do you want to play a 50 pence game?"
100%. I literally have done it for the stadium. Now making it. I'm going to Treforest, mate. I'm finding him. Can we play the 50 pence game?
That's brilliant.
Yeah, just little things like that, you know.
That's one of the best stories I've heard in terms of football. Yeah. I can't believe that.
Like, as non-footballers, as people who've never played the game, we're fascinated by like little insights like that. Yeah. So that, like, people want to hear that sort of stuff.
Yeah. 100%.
That's class.
Well, awesome. We'll finish on that. Michael, honestly, thank you brilliant. So much.
Loved it. Loved
really
it.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure, mate. Thank you for absolutely doing amazing.
Obviously, good luck for the future. Yeah. And everyone, I don't know if you've got anything you want to shout out about or anything. You don't need to.
Nah, I'm perfectly cool. All just good. Keep following your podcast, you know what I mean?
Appreciate that.
It's really good. Everyone keep listening and that sort of thing.
Thanks.
Really appreciate that, mate. Yeah. We'll see you next Wednesday, every Wednesday for the rest of the season. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Tell me stories of all that are great. Cherish these days before it's too late.
It's not true, so I was wondering if you saw that. Do you want to speak about it on the podcast?
I don't mind it.
Yeah, we'll speak about it on the podcast. Yeah, 100%.
Even Hoods. Because I think Hoods has said something on there as well. That's not true. Do you know what I mean? It's
it'd be good to set a record straight for something like that as well.
Definitely. Like they said, people turned up the training ground and I was hiding and stuff like that. That happened at Ipswich. It didn't happen at Cardiff.
I was going to say, I'd never heard of any stories.
Yeah, fucking like gangsters turned up at the training ground.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
You're talking about everything before.
Sorry, mate. Yeah, I got...